A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 349. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but we are not talking about the television version. We are talking about the computer game, the text adventure from Infocom. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So roughly once a year, we look at a spin-off from a British science fiction television show into another medium. We have covered things in comics and audio dramas and even film before. This is the first time that we are straying into gaming. So we are looking at this computer game. It was a text adventure, completely text-based, and it came out in 1984, and it was distributed by Infocom. But Douglas Adams, who of course wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, had a hand in designing the game himself.
Yes, and it does have some of his distinctive humor, of course, as part of the game, quite a huge part. Now, we have to say, Brian, that you and I are not really gamers. In fact, I'm going to admit right up that I don't think I ever successfully got out of the bedroom in this game. But we have found a way to cover this, which we'll talk more about in our second episode. But, as I say, we're not really the gamer type ourselves, are we?
That's right. But there is a lot we can say about this for sure.
So the background, as we've said, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in all its many incarnations starts, of course, as a BBC radio play in 1978, jumps from there to a hugely successful series of novels, all by Douglas Adams, of course.
Yes, the original radio version had some of it co-written by John Lloyd as well, but by the time we continue on to other media, it really has been taken over by Douglas Adams, who was largely responsible for it to begin with. There was a television series, a TV miniseries in 1981, BBC production that we have talked about before, of course. There was also a movie, a theatrical film that came out much later in 2005. And in all versions where we start off with this is with the adventures of Arthur Dent, a rather confused human who escapes from the Earth just before it's destroyed by a Vogon constructor fleet in order to make way for a hyperspace bypass.
Indeed it does, and you may, for people who know the various samples that we use in the opening intro to the episode, you can hear Arthur arguing with the man who has come to knock down his house at the start of that TV series in our opening. And of course, we covered it back in British Invaders episodes 12 and 13 when we did the TV series. And that was my first appearance on British Invaders. On what I was thinking at the time was just going to be a guest appearance. And I'm still here, Brian.
And yeah, we caught you in and now you're here. That's what happens with podcasting sometimes.
Like Ford Prefect, I just sort of like arrived and then somehow I'm still here.
Yes. So the game itself that we're talking about was created by Douglas Adams, who was well known for his enthusiasm about computer technology. He was an early adopter of Apple computers and was involved in doing lots of computer-related things. Some people argue that the distractions of computers and computer games may have been partly responsible for his infamous problems with keeping his deadlines for novels. He said the best part about deadlines was the whooshing sound they make as they go by.
Always have to mention that classic Douglas Adams line, I think, when you mention his deadline problems.
Of course. Yeah, and the books were bestsellers. They went very well. And while the books were coming out, the TV adaptation was happening. And even back then, there was talk about a film. There were record album versions and second series of the radio series. There was a lot happening all at once in the 80s for The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And as part of this, there was talk about doing a computer game.
And as you say, Brian, Douglas Adams himself was a bit of a gamer, and he was approached by the Infocom gaming company to start work on A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game. Now, Infocom, we should mention, quite well known at that time for a text-based adventure called Zork. And they paired Douglas Adams up with a game designer called Steve Moretzky, who at that point was best known for his 1983 game, which was called Planetfall. And I don't know the game particularly, but when I read the description of it, it has a certain sort of like resonance, I think, Brian.
Yes, I think it does share some vaguely Adams-esque humor. And I suspect it was because of the humor in that that they chose to have Steve Moretzky work with Adams on this. Apparently, Planetfall does feature a character who starts as a lowly janitor on a starship, and there's also a witty robot sidekick called Floyd. So there may have been some Douglas Adams influence on what Moretzky had been working on earlier.
Probably a good pairing to put together for Infocom.
I think it was, and it was one that proved to be successful. The game was implemented in a system called MDL, which appropriately is sometimes nicknamed Model. If you're interested in these details, it was a sort of Lisp-like way of doing things that works with ZIL and that sort of functional grouping of things, if you're interested in those sorts of things. The game was released in 1984 for the Apple II and Macintosh and the Commodore 64 computers, along also with the Amiga, Atari, and MS-DOS systems. So this was a full spread of things for a text-based game on a variety of platforms.
And there's an interview with Douglas Adams, which we'll refer to in our next episode. But I'll just mention the line that Adams said he did offer to learn MDL himself to help program the game, but Infocom said that they wanted the game to come out that year, so they left him to do the jokes, as he put it.
That does make sense from their point of view that they would take that approach of having someone who already knows how to build a text adventure game.
Absolutely. I think the other thing that Infocom were known for at that time was actually including some props, or what they called feelies, in the game packaging. And so for the Hitchhiker's Guide game, you got a Don't Panic badge, or button, as you'd call it in North America. You got a little plastic bag filled with pocket fluff. You got a few other bits and pieces. And you got those famous peril-sensitive sunglasses made from black cardboard. So you could put on the famous peril-sensitive sunglasses and not be able to see anything. So the plot of the game, we're going to be talking more about in our next episode. But would it be fair to say, Brian, that every incarnation of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, in all the different media it's been in, they all have their own slight differences and all have slight variations?
Yes, that was absolutely the case. And it was something that was part of how Douglas Adams wanted to do things, that you would have differences and slightly different takes on things and different ways the story would go in different versions.
Okay, so it does start, I think, similarly to all the versions, I guess, with Arthur in his house, which is about to be demolished, and you've got to get Arthur out of the house, onto a Vogon spaceship, and ultimately onto the fabulous spaceship, the Heart of Gold. And this was all done in text-based instructions, I guess.
Yes. It was a completely text-based thing with no graphics or visuals, where you would type something in and you would get a response. So you could do something, you would start off in bed in the game and you could say, you know, leave the house, and it would tell you, oh, you have to get out of bed first. So you type get out of bed, and then you would say something else and it would tell you what happened. And you would have this sort of conversation with the game where you're typing in what you want to do or maybe asking questions about what you see, and it would give you responses to say what was happening. And that was sort of how you would go through this quite complicated game. And of course, part of what they're doing is starting off with this wonderful parallel thing from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where Arthur's house is about to be demolished to make way for a bypass, and then of course the Earth is about to be demolished to make way for a hyperspace bypass. So you have that, and they're incorporating that into the game, and they are moving along towards the point where you are approaching the planet of Magrathea. So it does not complete the novel or the radio series. It really deals with that first chunk of it. And it does it from the eyes of Arthur Dent to start with. And then you sort of do a flashback mode where you go back and get to go through some of the same events through the eyes of Ford Prefect and Zaphod Beeblebrox and Trillian. So you get these different points of view all covering sort of the first chunk of the first book of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Fascinating stuff. We'll be talking more about it next time.
Yeah, so looking at some of the legacy and the success of this, the game sold 59,000 copies in its first year and went on to sell 400,000 copies and became one of the best-selling computer games of the 1980s. So this was a big deal. This did very well.
An enormously successful and popular game with a great reputation. So much so that in 1996, it appeared in Computer Gaming World's top 150 games of all time at that point, where it was at position, would you believe it, 42. Now, I'm not sure if that was the voting or if it was just allocated that position by Computer Gaming World. But if you know your Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy lore, and I'm sure everybody does, you'll be aware of the significance of the number 42. So what a charming little note to see that it was at that position in the chart, Brian.
That must have been a setup. That can't be a coincidence.
Now, at some point, the rights reverted to Douglas Adams in the 1990s, away from Infocom. And there was a Java version, which was then released by a company called Digital Village for the BBC's Comic Relief efforts in 1997, and appeared on the Comic Relief website before taking up home on Douglas Adams' own website at that point.
Yes, that was the first of the online versions of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game, but it wouldn't be the last.
That's right, because in 2004, for the 20th anniversary of the game, the BBC, no less, launched a Flash version on their website with illustrations this time. So moving from just text to actually getting some illustrations, and they came from Rod Lord. And Rod Lord had done the original cell-based animated graphics for the guide in the TV version from 1981. The graphics that looked like they were computer animation, but actually were cell-based animation. So how nice to have those turning up in 2004 on a 20th anniversary version for free on the BBC.
Yes, and that started to bring the visuals of the TV version guide entries into the game. And that version actually won a BAFTA for Best Online Entertainment in 2005. And Steve Moretzky's website has some good images of his BAFTA award in various hitchhiker's poses around the world, which is quite lovely.
Yes. If you want to see a BAFTA with a towel at various points around the globe, that's quite fun to see on his website.
Of course. In 2014, there was another updated version. This time, it was the BBC updating it for the 30th anniversary of the game. And this time it had new illustrations, which were by Nolan Worthington, who won a competition to do that. And I think it's still very much taking the aesthetic from the television version and the guide entries that were done there.
Yes, they are. And they're quite lovely to look at on the BBC website, where you can still see them, obviously, and still play the game, which is great fun.
And this version also tweets the in-game deaths of players at H2G2 game on Twitter. And if you know this game, it's very easy to lose. It's very easy to die in it. So there are a lot of in-game deaths happening, and those get tweeted now, which is an interesting twist on things. I think that's something Douglas Adams would have approved of.
He certainly would. This sort of like Twitter link giving you an update on various players around the world's progress and their unfortunate demises within the game. And it does, the BBC version continues that sort of Adamsian humour that characterises every version of The Hitchhiker's Guide. Even down to the technical FAQ page for the BBC Online version of the game, which has got that same sort of rather deadpan Douglas Adams humour in the replies to various difficult questions that people pose. So yeah, it's great fun.
Absolutely. It's great to see the game continue to live in that way. And of course, it's available free online. So that's really nice.
Now, of course, with this success and legacy, there was often talk of a sequel game. And of course, Douglas Adams himself also talked about several other computer games. But there were various problems. I think towards the end of the 80s, 1989, Infocom ran into financial difficulties and folded. And I guess with Douglas Adams and his own plans, well, as you say, Brian, there was always that notorious problem of his with deadlines. There was some early code for a sequel game leaked online in 2008, and I know very little more about it other than that fact, I'm afraid, Brian. But obviously there were some early coding attempts.
That's right. I don't know how much that actually gave us about what the sequel would have had, but really the text adventures like that were mostly a phenomenon of the 1980s. And when we got through the 80s and, you know, the downfall of Infocom, at that point, it was starting to become pretty clear that the one game from 1984 was all that there would be in that sort of text adventure style for The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes, and of course, as you say, sadly, Douglas Adams passed away in 2001, so there's no new Hitchhiker's content in a way. But, you know, well played to the BBC for putting these versions up online for free and for maintaining that Douglas Adams inflected humour in the way that it deals with the technical instructions, the FAQ, and even tweeting about progress within the game. So, yeah, well done, BBC.
Yes, it's lovely to have the extra graphical things added to it and having this classic Hitchhiker's Guide game so easily available is really nice.
So next time, we're going to actually get to the game itself. We're going to talk about the gameplay and its notorious difficulty. But we're not going to do that by ourselves, Brian.
That's right. We have recruited someone who will give us a hand with that and help guide us, as it were, as a guest host. So we'll have something a little bit different next time.
Looking forward to it.
Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there, where we always have some nice discussions going on.
Indeed we do. And you can also find us as a member of a game-based network at The Voice of Geeks. That's VogNetwork.com, where you'll find some other podcasts, including, as I say, some very gaming themed ones where they're much more of experts than we are, Brian.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.